Okay, friends, hi, and let's go on. There's still quite a few things to do tonight, but looks like there's time for one more program, maybe program 67 here in the externalization of the hierarchy. Well, what we've been looking at here is the Tibetan's work. How he tried to reach certain people and have them function on the periphery of his ashram. And how he was more successful in reaching what he said were the esotericists and aspirants. Rather than the people that he chose. Although, of course, they were, in a sense, esotericists, or at least students of it, and aspirants. And then the publishing of the books, the newer truths, the truths for the future, the seed concepts for the new civilization, and then the externalization of the hierarchy. Now, here's the third aspect of his work. Just want to get all this adjusted if I can. Okay. The World War then reached a final stage. The first stage was from 1914 to 1918. It then proceeded in a subterranean fashion, only to erupt once more in 1939. Well, that was the invasion of Poland by the Nazis in power, continuing with extreme fierceness and cruelty till 1945, when the power to continue the fight ended and the atomic bomb wrote finis to the world chapter of disaster. The atomic bomb, though used only twice destructively, ended the resistance of the powers of evil because its potency is predominantly etheric. Now, that may be something that we don't realize. Many people have been in dismay at the Tibetans' consideration of the dropping of that bomb as a major, major spiritual event. But he's looking at things in the long term, and to end the powers of the forces of evil, as they represent the cosmic evil, the Black Lodge, was really necessary. At least I think that's how he seems to see it, and also struck, maybe even more importantly, the death blow to materialism. So its potency is primarily etheric. And as I say, I don't know how we would be able to know that except for a report from someone who is a deep occultist and master, as the Tibetan is. Its uses are twofold at this time. A, as the forerunner of that release of energy which will change the mode of human living and inaugurate the new age wherein we shall not have civilizations and their emerging cultures, but a world culture and an emerging civilization, thus demonstrating the true synthesis which underlies humanity. The atomic bomb emerged from a first-ray ashram, working in conjunction with a fifth-ray group. And from a long-range point of view, its intent was and is purely beneficent. Now, that's, we are so attached to the form, and we find human suffering so abhorrent that it's natural that we would judge the dropping of the atomic bomb as a great human tragedy. The Tibetan is taking a different point of view and looking towards a new civilization. Yes, it caused tremendous human suffering and probably forestalled even greater suffering had it not been available to end the onslaught of the powers of evil. If Germany had not already surrendered, it certainly would have after the dropping of the bombs on August 6th and August 9th, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So this is where the perspective of the spiritual occultist is different from that of normal humanity, and is often called into question by those who understand less. As a means in the hands of the United Nations to enforce the outer forms of peace and thus give time for teaching on peace and on the growth of good will to take effect. So this is its use. Let's take a look. To change as a forerunner of that release of energy. That's one of its purposes, and that was 74 years ago. And as a means in the hands of the United Nations, now, of course, there has been a nuclear proliferation, and a very dangerous situation exists, and DK warned if the world continued as an armed camp, there would be an explosion. And that explosion could destroy humanity and set back million by millions of years the attempt to raise up a human race that would take its proper role in the divine plan of the planet. So what else was its use as a means in the hands of the United Nations to support or enforce the outer peace? And so that a true peace could be taught and could be understood. The atomic bomb, okay, and of course since that time, those earlier bombs begin to look like firecrackers. As a means in the hands of the United Nations, it provided space. And there have been many attempts to study peace and to bring about the causes of peace. The atomic bomb does not belong to the three nations who perfected it and who own the secrets at present. Those secrets were passed on to others through espionage, unwisely so. And these three countries, the United States of America, Great Britain, and Canada. It belongs to the United Nations for use, or let us rather hope simply for threatened use, when the aggressive action on the part of any nation rears its ugly head. It does not essentially matter whether that aggression is the gesture of any particular nation or group of nations, or whether it is generated by political groups of any powerful religious organization, such as the Church of Rome, who are as yet unable to leave politics alone and attend to the business for which all religions are responsible, leading humanity, human beings, closer to the love of God. So D.K. said really that these secrets must not be passed along to certain other nations that cannot be trusted with them, but of course they were, and now even bellicose nations of no great stature have built atomic weaponry. So there is a danger. So DK is talking here about, you know, his work and the work of maybe helping to build the peace, I believe. And number four, the world war now being ostensibly over, apparently over, in the April-May period of 1945, it ended, and this is a 1946 letter or article. Has it gone underground again? That's the maybe the big question. So the world war now being ostensibly over and the work of restoration leading to resurrection being slowly implanted, the work of the hierarchy is to foster that enthusiasm in the hearts of people everywhere, which will enable them to work wholeheartedly for right human relations and the spread of that simple but tonic quality, goodwill. All right, let's note that arresting phrase, that simple but tonic quality, a goodwill. So I'll make that a bit larger, so that we can have it in mind. And to foster enthusiasm, you know, the breathing in of the divine, the breathing in of the God, like inspiration, enthusiasm, they go in the same category. It is enthusiasm in the spiritual sense, which is lacking today, even among those who see the mind of Christ and the plans of the hierarchy as existing in factual usefulness. Those who have for years read my teachings on goodwill with real belief in what I say, but who evidence no willingness to sacrifice time or money, block the growth of the movement. It is the task of the hierarchy to promote goodwill as the first step in their plans. And it is that quality which is today closest to the heart of Christ. Goodwill to men. Glory to God, goodwill to men. Peace on earth. It's in the Messiah, the great choral work. Goodwill to men, or rather among men, was the primary stage of the three promises made by the angels at his birth. Well, the birth of the initiate Jesus, at least, with the Christ before long taking over as his informing teacher. So enthusiasm in the spiritual sense is required. And, to what degree has that possibility of enthusiastic engagement with promoting goodwill been sustained among our numbers? The angels at his birth, goodwill, leading to right human relations, leading to peace on earth leading to glory to God. It's a beautiful sequence, isn't it? The sounds of the Messiah are running through my mind right now as I read this. What a great offering to humanity and a source of inspiration coming through Georg Friedrich Handel. Goodwill, leading to right human relations, leading to peace on earth, leading to glory to God. The great angels sing around his throne, holy, 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 and they glorify God, the seraphim, and I don't know, I haven't studied sufficiently, but maybe the cherubim too, circling his throne. Of course, those are symbolic terms. And analyzed, these words simply mean that goodwill will result in right human relations in that center which we call humanity. This will produce the possibility of that peace which characterizes the hierarchy appearing on earth and leading to the glory of God which animates the activity of Shambhala, the center where the will of God is known. How beautiful to think that the glory of God animates Shambhala. Well, that's the sequence. And maybe in our own lives too, we have to attend to such a sequence. Through the expression of goodwill, our relations with others will become correct and right and will lead to peace in our relations and will lead to the glorification, the expression in glory of the higher aspects of our nature. A human being can be glorified. And when Christ reenacted the transfiguration before the astonished disciples, he was in a state of glory, which means a kind of a great emanated effulgence of light and love and spiritual power. Therefore, intelligent relationship, practical love, and the full expression of the divine will are bound to occur if the correct sequence of activities is followed. Yeah, and we do see that DK makes much of the thought of the sequence, because first things have to come first, and goodwill starts it all off. Something so simple as goodwill, this simple but tonic quality, toning up all of our mechanism, our vehicles, our instrument of expression, elevating them to a high state of sensitivity, strength, and responsiveness. Goodwill can do all that. I just read a very sad story. There's a man who a black man who fed police forces when they were on active duty, and he was just shot and killed by the police. Maybe it was accidental, I don't know. It seems to have been accidental. But there we have someone expressing goodwill. There was a man also who let into his home many demonstrators when they were pursued by the police, and they had no warrant to follow into his home. And he said, you know, he would do it again, of course. Many acts of kindness have gone forward in the present chaos, in which the those in great power seem to misunderstand human need for living without fear and anxiety simply because of the color of their skin. Well, all of these things, they will happen. Intelligent relationship, practical love, and the full expression of divine will, they will occur. The question is always when. At present, says the Tibetan, even the first of them remains a hope. The factors of the failure of the religious and political groups, and he does include also Masonry there, and education, and the apathy of the mass of men have greatly complicated the task of the hierarchy. So we have a hope, but maybe some of this has begun to materialize in certain places. And yet when crisis strikes, such as in this year, the global pandemic and the riots due to abuses, it seems that humanity has not learned very much. So the Tibetan, you know, is talking about his work and his activities and the sequence that his work and his activities have followed. Number five, my personal work has been to bring all this to the attention of the general public through my interpretation of the problems of humanity and bring it to the point where simplicity of purpose, an inspiring and flaming ardor, and a minimum of organization may implement the new presentation of goodwill as it affects and changes the sovereign world religions, which are forgetful of the words of the Christ, "My kingdom is not of this world." So, largely an educative task. And there has been quite a bit of success, as DK tells us. The readers of his books are far more than we may reckon. So he brings goodwill to our attention and the hope that inspiring and flaming ardor, which I think he is known to have demonstrated on so many occasions, and a minimum later of organization, rather organism taking the place of organization, may implement the new presentation of goodwill as it affects religions that act more like sovereign nations. He seems at this period to point out the worldliness of the Catholic Church, but he's not that worldliness does not belong only to institutional Catholicism. There is a worldly aspect to many of these churches, and they, you know, all the way from Calvinism that to be rich shows that God favors you. Well, you know, Calvin had a lot of the grasping sign Cancer and the moon in Taurus, I do believe. So he had a certain materialistic consciousness and also a lack of love for those who were not of his fold. So he wants people to remember the words of the Christ, my kingdom is not of this world. As it permeates into political conferences of world statesmen and rulers, and as it governs the decisions of science and economics, this is goodwill, penetrating and governing, characterizing, and this does not happen often enough. Okay. In so doing, and in the direful task of pointing out mistakes and errors of ancient standing, you know, nobody who adheres to a particular orthodoxy, whether religious or political, wants to hear that they have been mistaken all these years. The direful task of pointing out mistakes and errors of ancient standing, wrong and disastrous attitudes, and human separativeness, and inevitable opposition has been evoked. And this is the, what can I call it? Reactionary response. We have, even right now, so much of it in the world, and especially in that heir to the Piscean sixth-ray civilization, the United States. There is where we can look for reactionary response, and we will find it. Well, going on here, had there been none, my efforts would have been futile. So when we point out mistakes, those who adhere to the mistakes do react. Had there been no such responses, DK says his efforts would have been futile. I have said naught that is not true. And the story about him is, as Blavatsky praised him long ago, a youth so pure that no lie would ever cross his lips. I have said naught that is not true, and I retract no single word which I have said. So many people have tried to take the Tibetan's writings and say, well, really, Alice Bailey wrote this, you know, on the subject of Judaism or on the subject of homosexuality or the failure of the churches. You know, there are a lot of unpalatable things, unpalatable to some, which the Tibetan wrote. But here he comes boldly forward and says, it's what I have said is true. There are many who prefer the esoteric truths anent the Antikorana, the world constitution, the doctrine of man, the law of rebirth, and the many intricate teachings related to world planning. Okay, and these they have received in full measure from me, and that is certainly true when one assesses the kind of work that he has accomplished. There are others who desire information anent the hierarchy, the working and standing of the masters, the training to be given to disciples and initiates. They have received. You know, his teaching, we know, is voluminous, clearly. I have now dealt with the, in the past few years, I have now dealt in the past few years with world abuses and the problems with which humanity is faced in this period of restoration of God's plan for man, and not of former conditions, the restoration of the plan, the forces of restoration coming in under Aries. Okay. So he tells us, I've given you much, is really what he's saying, and elsewhere more than you can ever assimilate, he has told us. And then, as well as the many intricacies having to do with the esoteric teaching, he has given us so much concerning practical approaches, which must be undertaken if humanity is to be saved from its own negativity. It is interesting to note, he says, that when the hierarchy seeks to meet the need of the masses for better conditions and to aid in the changing of ecclesiastical and political abuses, men are apt then to withdraw their interest because the task is hard, or to repudiate the statements anent that which is evil, because from their point of view, it is not possible for the hierarchy to find fault or to take a stand against wrong, just as many repudiated the fact that the hierarchy took a stand during the war upon the side of the forces fighting for the freedom of humanity and refused in any way to endorse those fighting on the side of darkness. This is an important idea here. We may enjoy very much the intricate discussions and the details and then the conduct of hierarchy, but when it comes to doing the real redemptive work, we may pull back, which is a sad commentary. The hierarchy is a great fighting body today. What a statement. And one wonders, is it now so, 74, 75 years later? The hierarchy is a great fighting body, fighting for the souls of men. As Christ said to Peter, I've wrestled with the devil for your soul, Peter. Fighting all that blocks the expansion of the human consciousness, fighting all that limits human freedom. I said not license, which is an excessive sort of libertinism where anything is allowed simply because you want anything, and fighting to remove those factors and barriers which militate against the return of the Christ and the emergence of the hierarchy as a fully functioning body on the earth, a great fighting body. Let's somehow impress that upon our consciousness. The hierarchy is a great fighting body today. There is a battle on for the souls of men. Fighting all that blocks the expansion of the human consciousness. Now, there's so many dogmatisms which adhere to prevent the widening of horizons. People are in actual physical and financial slavery. And the disbelief or the misinterpretation of the idea of the return of the Christ militates against that very return. There is nothing weak, vacillating, sentimental, or neutral in the attitude of the hierarchy. This must be grasped by humanity, and the strength and insight, as well as the love of the hierarchy, must be counted upon. Nothing weak, nothing vacillating. You know, it's like the Christian conception of the meek, mild, suffering, long-suffering Jesus, when in fact the Tibetan says that he is a great general. After all, you know, think back to the time of his second initiation when he was Joshua, and whether we believe those wars were right or wrong, he engineered the fall of Jericho and the invasion of the Promised Land. Doesn't sound like too much meekness to me. So let us carry it in mind. There is nothing weak, vacillating, sentimental, or neutral in the attitude of the hierarchy, a great fighting body. And the Christ has been the commander of the forces of light, the supreme commander of the forces of light. What Christ is this compared with the misconception held by so many? We cannot favor the diseases of humanity and say we will not strike a blow against disease, because disease is found in humanity. That the welfare of humanity and the disease are of equal value? No, we can never do that. And we learn from hierarchy, which is less compromising even. So the love, the strength, the insight, and love of hierarchy must be counted upon. Those are the three aspects of divinity on the different rays. I have in the above remarks enumerated for you certain of the objectives facing the hierarchy at this time, and of course, some, you know, DK's work involved in that. He's been listing what his work is within the objectives of hierarchy. The objectives which involve the personal attention of the Christ. He's working at things that humanity may little suspect, and which they probably mistake. After all, what is the Christ doing? You know, simply encouraging people to believe in him? There has to be both faith and works. There are people who think that by faith alone salvation comes, and that would be, from the hierarchical perspective, an unrealistic position. So, he has given us enumerated for us certain of the objectives, and they all have a potent and beneficent effect upon humanity if they can be accomplished, and to a certain extent and unevenly, they are being accomplished, and still much remains to be done. Let me enumerate them in concise form. It helps in the teaching, you know, to do that, because it is essential that there be clear perception of the emerging values on the part of workers of all grades and kinds in the world, for otherwise perception is not possible. To each point enumerated, I will append a few brief words, the reason why it is regarded as important. The following are factors. To which the Christ gives his personal attention. Now, he's been a good teacher, tells you what he's going to say, then says it, and then tells you in summary form what he has said. So we have just been looking at this, and now maybe we'll get this in a clearer and in still more concise form. The reorganization of the world religions. Why is it important? And let's just say why it is regarded as important. So we'll know what we're doing here. To make way for the world religion, universal religion, the coming new world religion, to return humanity to the simplicity which is in Christ. Of course, he is a member of Shambhala, and the keynotes, or one of the keynotes of Shambhala, is simplicity. And we can learn more about that on page 518 of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. And to rid the world of theology and ecclesiasticism, these are concrete-minded and very limited interpretations of the nature of divinity, and they stultify the possibility of growth. So that's number one, factors to which the Christ gives his attention, and Master DK along with him. Number two, the gradual dissolution of Orthodox Judaism and the reasons, because of its presentation of a wrathful Jehovah, you know, a lunar deity, not the most pleasant type, caring only for his chosen people, so a limited God. This is a basic evil. Well, maybe we might not think so or see the harm of it, but this is how DK sees it. The Lord of the world, the God in whom we live and move and have our being, is totally otherwise. So Jehovah has taken the place of the omnipotent God. I remember a song by Schubert called The Omnipotence. And it begins with the idea that great is Jehovah the Lord, but what Jehovah is being substituted or being seen as the great deity and not in its more occult guise. This is a basic evil, he says, because of its separativeness, yes, because it is so ancient that its teachings are largely obsolete, although held with pride by its adherents. And because when the Jews become spiritual, they will greatly benefit mankind, for they are found in every land. So the diaspora, the spreading of the Jewish group throughout the world, or mostly anyway, is of great value to the uplifting of humanity. And he spoke then of certain of the Jewish group being members of the spiritual aristocracy. After all, they've had such a very long experience. And then preparation for the new revelation. Reasons why it's important, because there, where there is no vision, the people perish. They have nothing to look forward to. And B, because human expectancy indicates its emerging presence. Interesting that expectancy rises when something new is on the horizon of human consciousness. And C, because the new invocation will inevitably bring it to us. What we call the great invocation will bring this revelation, whatever it is, to us. Now, there have been minor, you know, revelations, but this sounds like something which is major and affecting all of humanity. So here is the fourth point. He added two more to the original three. The reaction of hierarchy to Shambhala, the adjustments, we might say. Why is this important? Reasons. It produces a direct channel. So the stimulation of hierarchy is certainly speeded up. Conditions the inflow of the power energy, and hierarchy always needs more power to carry forth the task to which it is now consecrated. Its reappearance and its regeneration of humanity. Point C relates the will to good to goodwill, and so often they are separated or the relationship between them is not understood. And point D creates new constructive tensions and new ashrams relating hierarchy to Shambhala. So I think, you know, we're witnessing something very good here. This this encapsulation is very, very good. It's really good to have the reminder, isn't it? You know, this power of repetition is not to be discounted. Then I think he listed five altogether. And here is the fifth, a closer relation of the hierarchy and humanity. And why is this so important? What are the reasons? Will produce or produces in the near future the externalization of certain ashrams, and maybe all ashrams will emerge eventually, but in the near future, certain ashrams emerge, and he talks about whose ashrams those will be a little later in the book. It leads to the reappearance of the hierarchy on Earth, because when humanity appreciates what the hierarchy is and its attempt to move outward and downward, it facilitates human cooperation with that externalizing process, recognizes that man's point of development warrants this, because we're right on the edge of entering the fifth kingdom, at least for so many human beings. Many cycles have been completed, and the time has come after 21 million years of the human kingdom's presence on this planet, and the importing of already semi-developed human beings from the moon chain and the previous solar system, the time has come. And mankind is ready to undertake the union of soul and personality. Point D presents a nearing opportunity for revelation. The closer the hierarchy comes to humanity, the more the light they carry. Will characterize human consciousness. Okay, closer relationship. Relation between hierarchy and humanity. And he did add another point, which he discussed in relation to the Christ's great concerns, an effort to avert war. And why is that so important? Well, you know, it seems almost obvious, but because the next war would annihilate the greater part of the human race. That would mean the necessity of starting all over. It's reminds me of the story of Master Moria and his a weaver who undertook the weaving of a great tapestry for the king. And Moria, and it took 10 years. And Moria noticed that one thread was out of place. And he said, "Begin it again. Redo it." Well, that would be a heartbreaking command, which could not be avoided or evaded, but certainly the lesson would be learned in a very hard way. And it does seem like humanity is learning lessons in a very hard way. So this effort to avert war that the Christ is undertaking to, by whatever means, to make sure that there would not be another war. Because having a religious basis, the hate involved would be greater far than anything hitherto known. Isn't it amazing that these religions offering ostensibly the expression of love are so hate-filled? Interesting that Christianity itself is ruled by Scorpio, says the Tibetan. And there's a lot of that in Islam as well. Judaism has Capricorn and Virgo connected with it. Because Shambhala would be involved, and this has never been the case, at least in a human war, maybe a natural cataclysm is affecting the planet. Yes, Shambhala has been involved in the volcanic destruction of the continent, or, you know, continents of Lemuria, and in the destruction of Atlantis, some of which, however, did not sink beneath the sea. As D.K. tells us that the United States of America is the center of the old Atlantean continent, and hence its psychism. Well, these are things to which, these 6 points are things to which the Christ is attending, and hierarchy is assisting. Things involving, conditions involving the personal attention of the Christ. So here is the summary of all that, and there's no reason why we should not understand quite clearly that to which the Christ is attending. And then when we read the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, we learn even more about what the Christ will teach. It's a very rich little book, and it points toward the future. And of course, it was written in the late 40s. Since Alice Bailey passed away in 49, it was written in the late 40s, and paved the way for an understanding of who the Christ is and what his reappearance really means. And all of these processes, let's call them six processes, have a beneficent effect upon humanity. They all have a potent and beneficent effect. Have we seen them operative? That is the question. Well, maybe a little more, as there are other broadcasts and things to do tonight. You can see, therefore, how critical spiritually are these times, and how urgent is the task which confronts the hierarchy and its workers on earth. The war may be over in the physical sense, but great issues are still involved and undetermined, and can lead either to peace or to a renewal of those conditions in which wars are generated and which, once generated, cannot be avoided. So you know how humanity is. When the obvious disappears, it's as if gone, when in fact all it has done is take on a subterranean position. Yes, and here is the, we'll look at it. Here's the 35 years, which follows 1946, and where the keynote of the WASAC may be changing, and where the Buddha's few more decades may be coming to an end. Well, I think we've done enough here, and for now, we're on page... 553. We're so close to the end. And let's transport this 548 to 553. And this is the 3rd of June, and it's number 67. Okay, and it's approximately just 1 hour. So I'll bring this down here to orient us when we start next, just at the turn of page 553. Hopefully I can keep going with these. Another 150 pages to go or so. So this is the end of program number 67, and it's 548 to 553, and we'll begin with program 68. And we don't know what day yet. Hopefully tomorrow on June the 4th, and it will be 552.3. /553, and on a day in June, And we don't know, will tomorrow be possible, but hopefully it will. And we certainly are being given the antecedents of our present condition to help us better assess what is our condition. And these are still critical times, externally, spiritually, urgently. Our task is still urgent, maybe even more so than at those earlier times. Wars are always subject to outbreaks if the conditions which cause them have not been remedied. Okay, friends, that's going to be it for the moment. And we will continue as soon as possible. So we'll stop our recording. Many blessings, lots of love. And you'll be receiving this.